Blog Talk Radio.
Imagine that. Hello, everyone. The Sonic Effects. We're going to give this another kick at the can. It's a pleasure to have you sitting in with us today, wherever you are. Always interesting seeing the kind. I get to see the countries that you're tuning in. That are tuning in. So you represent your entire either an entire continent or a whole nation. and I'm very happy to hear that. We're coming to, it's always an interesting time of year where I am. We are moving well into winter. Temperatures are dropping, the snow is beginning to form, and the winds, sometimes the winds howl. It makes you feel very good when you can put a few logs on the fire and be at ease with yourself. I've had, this will be my, going on to my, I guess, my 74th a Christmas season. You can kind of get used to them after a while. The first ones, I guess, you know, they're pretty exciting. But after 74 of them, they become a little more familiar. I find, though, I'm able to pick and choose. I'm very selective. One of the advantages of 74 years is that I have experiences that I can pick. I can still enjoy things from childhood. But there's so many wonderful things that happen, and it tends to temporarily erase the sort of the harshness of that can sometimes be quite overwhelming. But thank goodness that there's some people like us that are the antidote. We're the person that people point to and mock. Silly old fool. Doesn't he know any better? Life is really harsh. You ought not to be celebrating because there's cruelty in the world. And yet, we do. We know. It's not that we erase the harshness of man's inhumanity to man. We don't erase it, but we fight it. We put down our tools and we celebrate because we are part of community, and we understand. Of course we do. We don't wake up with stars in our eyes or rose colored glasses. Those of you who were like me were grew up in in the 60s. No, if you want to induce that starry gaze, you can certainly do that. You know, there's no shortage of people that will join you. But there, I'm talking about this other group of us that I meet when I'm out for a walk, or they're sitting, or I find this old boy just staring off into over a river, or noticing something, paying attention. Not that I interrupt that reverie. We see it in small children too. It's the fascination. How does that continue with when we know that we know there's injustice, we know there's failings. But how do we carry forward? Well, I think partly it's because there's a sense of stoicism. It's just what we do, what we are, how we're taught to look at the world. A nice, a simple example is we have so many new people coming into the country, which is great for our future. My goodness, and we're going through the usual, you know, the usual with the usual politics. There's talk, a lot of talk, very little action. So until the public put some pressure, and that's happening more and more and more. It's pretty interesting here. But the adjusted, being the hearing people, it's not the newness. If you're in your first winter, it can be pretty, you know, if you're out on that, and bear with me here, if you're out in Portage in Maine, and some of us will understand this reference, and it's the wind is howling so hard that the dogs are horizontal on their chains. You know that you're facing something that makes you want to go indoors. If you're up in Yellowknife, people look at you strange if you talk about the temperature. Well, you know, it's like we're in the Arctic. What do you think? You're just, of course, it's minus 40. It's, you know, look around. You notice where we are. You know, what's wrong with you? Like nobody's sympathetic. It's like, really? There's no cold. It's just you're not dressed right. So, you know, very, very practical. This is not, Canada doesn't own this. My goodness. There's so many people across. And I'm speaking now out of school, not the rhetoric of our politicians. My goodness, you know, all hail the politicians of the world. That's my, they do what they do. And, you know, I know they'll be angry hearing me say something like that. Well, they're essential. They're important. They're also a pain in the ass. But yes, they're essential. And yes, they're important. But yes, they're a pain in the ass. So, so life goes on. But I'm talking to the folks over anywhere where you've experienced these extremes, and you just, you know, what do you do? Life doesn't, you don't curl up, you just carry on. Whether it's over in northern Siberia or up in our big white north, great white north, or over in Finland or out in the mountains, it's in Sweden, you know, it's, or if you want piercing cold, you're on an island in the Maritimes, facing the North Atlantic, yeah, you get an experience that we fall in love with. It's like, really, maybe that's why we create good beer and appreciate a good whiskey and a good laugh, and we've developed a sense of humor. Yeah, that's all of us. It's not just here. All of us. And yeah, you know, people can stir us up and poke sticks at us and get us. And treat and create tensions. They do that all the time, but a lot of us don't buy it anymore. You can poke a stick, but we're not buying it. You can try and convince me that somebody is doing something wrong and harmful, but I'm not buying it until I see it for myself. Or we have a sit down, and don't blame me. Oh my goodness, no. You know, I'm one of those post-World War II babies. Mm-hmm. And you could say very lucky. And I recognize that every single day. I am fortunate not to have had to go to war like that. But I was also fortunate to have experienced conversations, beginning able to meet a lot of people that came back. And in a particular role that I had, I was able to have intimate conversations with these men and women. And none of them talked with me about the wanting vengeance and wanting to go at it again. No, maybe you've met the other kind. I don't. And I wasn't being selective. They all, both sides of the battle, and they all felt the same. It was crazy. Put down the guns. We're all the same people. We're trying to kill ourselves, you know. Everybody's shooting at everybody for it's madness. For what reason? For what gain? And that's what soldiers taught. That's what old soldiers taught me. You know, to be careful, to be respectful. Now, do I honor the people that do that work? Yes, of course. No, don't be. I'm not dopey about this. This is, but it's not because I'm aggrandizing what the politicians did to get into the mess in the first place. I'm honoring that these people did their call, answer the call, and they're not new at it, but it will continue on until we come together. And we come together very fast. It's a joy. One of these pleasures is what the science is doing, and you old boys can sit back and enjoy it. The accountability and the correction, the big correction that's coming, it's already started. The big correction is in the hands of school children and grandmothers. It's these smart cell phones. Man, they have tremendous memory. They can take pictures. We can read, you can pull back speeches that a politician's made, over the course of the entire year. We look at the video in our hand. And if that ain't accountability, I don't know what is. So if you say something, it's not like, oh my goodness, you know, it's don't say anything unless you're ready to have it as a headline. It's like, honest men don't need to be told that. You know, people with a sense of morality don't need to be told that. It's like, are you looking for a fight? Is that what you're trying to do? You want people tense all the time, looking over their shoulder? Cut it out. I don't know, that would be impolite and foolish to be talking like that or trying to provoke a fight. Why would you do that? Why would you even bring it up? So this time of year, it's these kind of thoughts that prevail. We can influence and we ought not to underestimate our capacities. The thoughtful listener, the person that wants to learn and wants to know. Attention to detail. Well, in the show today, we'll get into a bit more about that, the attention to detail. I'm going to be soon, I've been rubbing shoulders with a few Kabbalists and people that have been really, they really refine their connection with they're looking for a very, very elegant understanding of their place in the world around us, and it's fascinating conversation to have that impression, and then you work through the impression. What in the world does this all mean? What does it tell me? Well, it tells you just the fact that you're looking tells us a lot about you. Good music today too, and the poetry came from something that. Just sort of those coincidental things. And I apologize if I can't remember performing or bringing the Sonnet 29 to you when in disgrace with fortune. But I just found it so profound and pleasing. It fit into this time of year. So we'll get into that again. And we'll get into that. And the tunes. Beautiful, beautiful, some beautiful. We have Wynton Marsalis and Ben Webster, Oscar Peterson, some really amazing. So I'll be quiet now. But let's enjoy a piece. This is Where and When, Wynton Marsalis. I'm learning that the system's not picking up music. Oh, I'm working on it. Believe me, I am. So you'll hear these little gaps and apologize for that. The commentary today, Dying Regretted. Maybe what others think isn't nearly as important as being honest with ourselves. If examining motives and intentions is a path to happiness, results hereabout suggest it's become a bit overgrown with accumulated debris, that it requires concentrated effort to find it. That happiness. But why? Why would anyone subject themselves to an existence of self-examination when cheating is so easy? Cutting corners, who's going to know? It's about you. Surely we have all heard the logic. Old men advise to stay healthy, avoid doctors and hospitals. You go near a doctor, he's going to find something wrong. So if you're not near them, you're perfect health. I know. It's a version of ignorance is bliss. But cloak this with language describing Masonic function, especially the part about higher moral standards, and we need to go no further to sort out the confusion and compromise that was spurred by local tradition. What is the truth? Is ignorance bliss? And before opening that door, reason tells us living to pursue a life of virtue is impossible without using navigational tools. We were handed nine of them after we got round to settling on that number, but we conveniently handed them back for safekeeping. Can you think why anyone would give up populist thinking to strike out on his own? Surely the cynic within him would panic at the very thought. Ignorance comes out of chaos quite easily. Knowledge requires disciplined thinking and patience. Accordingly, we live in a state of ignorance, darkness, willingly. But now we're telling ourselves we've chosen to struggle to understand. Truth isn't pretty. Honesty isn't easy. What if we did subscribe to that effort? Would that motivate us? Let me present an answer and try to convince you it's obvious. It isn't, but let me try. The motivation is the setting. It's rare to accomplish this feat alone. It is plausible when working alone in the company of like-minded. Universities were built on the idea, exchange of ideas. So it seems it was masonry built. Dying regretted? I prefer to think that it's a bit overstated. You're a memory, or I'm a memory. In the moment, at the very best of times. The past is gone and the future is in the imagination. Here. Giovanni Guidi, Avec le Temps. thank you. Giovanni Guidi, thank you to all that has helped us out, that have helped me solve this music problem. Oh my goodness, you have no idea how grateful I am for your feedback. Yeah, yeah. I picked up this wind of this sonnet listening to Shakespearean actress recite it. And it reminded me of, well, I think this might resonate, especially if you're at different ages. You know, I think in my 30s, I would have had been talking to you about my impression of this, and I'm separating out my own mind. I'm reading in Hermetic, I apologize for that, of course. But I've become more aware of impression and then understanding. And a lot, lot of what I do, and I wasn't necessarily aware of this. And I started thinking about the performance aspect of Masonry as we're talking about things Masonic. Our actual style, our manner, it reflects Masonic values. It's performative. So that's an interesting word. I'll leave that for you to research on your own. But it's an interesting to look that up. Interesting kind of an effect when you realize that just the fact that you're saying it and the content of what you're saying are performative and impactful. It's wonderful, I think. Here, the Sonnet 29. And I will be very, very, I think I'll try and be brief. I don't know why that would be quite a departure for me. Listen to this. And this is like, I don't think this is a criticism. I think, well, we'll talk about this when we're finished here. This is Sonnet 29. When in disgrace with fortune and men's eyes, I all alone beweep my outcast state. And trouble deaf heaven with my bootless cries, and look upon myself and curse my fate, wishing me like to one more rich in hope, featured like him with friends possessed, desiring his man's art and that man's scope, with what I most enjoy contented least, yet in these thoughts, myself almost despising, haply, I think of thee. And then my state, like to the lark of break of day arising from sullen earth, sings hymns at heaven's gate. And thy sweet love remembered, such wealth brings. And then I scorn to change my state with gains. If you've ever, of course you have, you've been in love, you need to look for it. You need to look for the experience. It's like looking for a perfect day. If you look for it, they're there and they're quite amazing, but you need to look for it. Just look for them. For those so inclined, look for angels. If not, they're just silliness. Look for them. This is when you're feeling sort of self pity is too strong a word, you know, and in disgrace with fortune in men's eyes, who's men? You're like your own. I alone beweep my outcast. Like, oh, poor me. People have more material gain. Well, you know, you live with an academic and they're reminding you about conspicuous displays of wealth, you know, the old money doesn't display their, they don't need to brag about it. They don't need to buy the flash car and they use up the bars of soap like Elizabeth, the Queen in England used to, when their guests were done, the soaps were taken from their rooms and recycled to her apartments. She wasn't going to throw them out. Now, remember, she had lived through the war and knew hardship. Sure. say quaint. And I think I read those kinds of thoughts go through my head when I'm reading through my mind, and trouble deaf heaven with my bootless cries. You know, what if, oh, poor me, you know, if only I had been like that. It's like saying that the only way we evaluate the only way we come to terms with our worth is by comparing us with somebody else's wealth or advantage or gain or something material. And this, I don't know, and I'll ask, put it to you, is this just simply a way to rationalize? You know, we hear said to us to join, particularly you and I who have taken certainly oaths, to blend our wants with our needs. Yeah. To be content with, to find contentment with what you have. My very beautiful friend and mentor, Robert, would often say to be content. He would look at his backyard with the green grass and the trees and the flowers around and talk about that, how content he was. He had no need to go and explore the world. He had already done that when he was younger. But he had no need. And he was completely satisfied, and he found a very deep satisfaction, and it taught me a lot. I was rushing around, you know, trying to create what I thought was assumed that would be part of my lifestyle, the visuals, the optics. And he changed all that. That my thinking changed quite a bit. Wishing me like to one more rich in hope. If only I'd been born to royalty, if only I had been born to wealth. You know, as if people in those situations don't have the same scale of emotion and distress that you do. You think that people escape accountability and guilt and conscience. You really think that that's all it takes? You can buy your way, stairways to heaven. Eh? You can buy your way to heaven. You think? Keep that thought then. If you do, because I can, my experience, what it is, doesn't matter. But my experience is on that last day when there is that accounting, and believe me, there is that accounting. Your thinking might change. Your thinking might change when you begin to see it becomes very, very clear. Like the purpose and the value and what's important in life. So all this stuff, this absolute tripe about morality and virtue, just meaningless, isn't it? Let's mock them. Let's laugh at them. It's silliness. But it isn't. It isn't. I look at the people around. I see some very, very beautiful people, beautiful men and women that are practicing a way of thinking, a way of life, and they are able to find, they're searching for the harmony. They learn what it is. They learn that it exists, and then they aim for it. They start to wonder, and it's like, well, if it is, exists, I would like to try that just to see, just to prove it to myself. Oh, it's all malarkey, isn't it? But what if, and this is the what ifs, what if you tried it? And what if a few thousand years of knowledge being passed on is actually valid? Do you begin to find that meditative state, that calm within the storm? Do you? A little, how much self-discipline? Well, how many voices are telling you that you can't, that you somehow there's a barrier, and it's all in your imagination. There's no barrier. I read this Sonnet 29, when in disgrace. So if you're thinking that, oh my goodness, I ought to be able to have that because people will judge me if I don't. Think about this. Yet in these thoughts, myself, almost despising. That's all in your mind. Of course, certain ways of thinking teach us that. that it's all of it is in the mind. And my goodness, isn't that just a terrible thought that we could actually begin to control, that it's all within our capacity. Something about that, isn't there? Two friends, Ben Webster and Oscar Peterson. Lovely. Here. I want you to think, this is our history corner. Poetry corner to history corner to jazz. Why not, eh? I want you to think about what's reflected inside your lodge. I tend to think the more we absorb, the more we study, the more we learn, you know, we acquire the knowledge, then we need to talk about it so that we begin to digest it and understand it. And then it becomes, somebody claims that then it becomes wisdom. I don't know about that. That seems a little bit self-promoting, but we discuss and then we apply. And we find ourselves making decisions or thinking, and it's like, where did that, my goodness, all of a sudden there's a clarity instead of this friction or the tension, there's an understanding and there's a comfort. It's like, I understand this kind of a moral dilemma because these are the values that are important in this situation. And it's because life becomes like a bit like a chess game, you know, where you have certain conventions. But more than that, Masons are given tools so that we know that we can't, you know, compartmentalize the world that we live in our life. So we learn to we're given certain tools of morality. We're only given 9 of them in our jurisdiction, but there's more, many, many more. And as we learn to become more refined, you know, we think in your mind, it might be the bull in the china shop, but in your mind, you're learning, you're picking up these tools and you're becoming very intimate with them. You're the oboist. You wanted to practice just because you like the sound of the oboe, and you keep at, or the cellist. My friend Terry, and you keep at it until you're sitting in the symphony. Yeah, it's like that. Things are reflected inside our lodges. The tensions, and we're going to hear about them here in this this piece of history. But think about your own situation. I won't harp on it because it's a rabbit's hole that I don't like to go down. But I do see tensions and antagonisms going on in a lodge. And I think, these are not necessarily bad people. Some of it I think is silly. And some of it I know is personality. And that's life. We don't sanitize and, make everybody into a pleasant person. People have baggage. But it reflects what's going on. In an uncanny way to reflect what's going on around us in society. In France here, prior to the revolution of 1789, Freemasonry betrayed the nature of ancient regime society. You know, who's in charge? Knowing your place. The lodges mirrored the social tensions and antagonisms of the old regime. Well, of course, it's always going to be yesterday that's reflected, because today and tomorrow hasn't really happened. That was a sip of espresso for those who care. A public forum, while at the same time offering the alternative inherent in the new political culture of the Enlightenment, where individuals contested for power, voted and elected their representatives, found identity in a polity separate from the communal identity offered by kin and church and estates. Of course, many forms of 18th century sociability helped to create the new public space. Some historians have even argue that in France, the corporate bodies, guilds, estates, and academies could inculcate ostensibly modern forms of social and political experience. None of them, however, offered a kind of political experience so intense that after the events of 1789 and beyond, they could still be remembered, as were the lodges, as bearing relation to the new social and political reality initiated by the French Revolution. We need to try to recreate the experience of certain French lodges in the 1770s and 1780s, particularly lodges in Strasbourg on the French-German border. We need to look at, and we will, and as we're wrapping up this whole piece of history, to look at the workings of the French Freemasonry as established after 1773 and on a national level. For it, we will rely upon the records of the Grand Lodge of France, made available to scholars only after World War II. After falling into hostile hands during the war, the records finally made their way to the Bibliothèque Nationale in Paris. For Strasbourg and the eastern province of Alsace, the evidence also comes from rich Masonic records preserved in private hands, but now to be found in the municipal archives of the city. They provide us with everything from correspondence and orations to detailed descriptions of ritual and ceremony. The Strasbourg records of 1770s and 1780s amply document that French lodges permitted men to speak and act in reforming as well as in deeply conservative ways. Both impulses subsequently surfaced in the revolutionary and anti-revolutionary culture created in 1789. The reforming discourse found in the lodges of the 1780s and elsewhere, once made legal a decade later, would come to be described as revolutionary. Yet throughout this story, it must be remembered that the men and women who created the new cultural form offered by the lodges did so often without the slightest interest in or desire for revolution. They participated in a new zone, what we've been calling civil society, without any notion that what they were doing could rightly be seen in hindsight as the intervention of new political culture, which in its turn permitted the events of 1789. We must be careful about causation here. Cultural permits. It does not determine. On the continent, the culture of sociability, especially when divorced from official sanctions and functions, permitted a new and mature civil society to emerge. Beneath the mantle of the old order, shaded and protected by it, but not the offspring of its originally feudal religious and political culture. In this respect, the lodges and philosophical societies were different from the guilds, confraternities, and various legally constituted and privileged corporations. Whether lay or clerical, just as the Enlightenment was different from traditional culture. Not surprisingly, the lodges could take on many persona, from the Republican to the conservative, as moments even to the mystical, although in the service of the secular. Predictably, they were often deeply troubled places. Two phenomena were most visible in the lodges of late 18th century provincial France than Strasbourg during the 1770s and 1780s. First and foremost were the dissensions bordering on internecine struggles within and between lodges. Well, so that's where it started. Imagine that. We've been influenced. How in the world did we ever let that happen, eh? How did that happen? Well, I've been working through the show today and corrected a problem live on air, of course, that means I can move forward with some good music and share that with you again. Oh, my goodness. I know you don't need an apology, but you know what I'm like. Thank you very much for tuning in. You found Masonic Effects. We try to put some meat on the bone, so to speak, to talk more thoughtfully about the antagonisms and pressures and things that are going on in our lodges and through our lodges and through Masonry in our lives. Just a small moment of reflection, not in any way intending to dominate the conversation, but just to be part of it. I hope that you will, I'm going to pull back on it. I will hope that you will commit random acts of Masonic kindness as just a way of thinking. And include yourself. I certainly would prefer that if you need to be charitable to yourself at all, and the people around you and the stranger and It's like seeing yourself and everybody around as human beings. Some have greater need than others. And what do you do? That's on us to decide. I look forward to seeing you again. Give me some feedback. I'm on, what am I on? I'm on X, Twitter, or whatever, at Masonic Effects. So thank you very much for sitting in. And just a little shout out here. Listeners, thank you very much. Greece, Britain, Brazil, the U.S., Russia, yes, Philippines, and South Africa. Of course, Canada, Britain, yeah. Just thank you. Thank you. It's a pleasure. We make interesting company. What will we finish with today? We think we'll finish with a little B.G. Adair. I think that would be fitting. Bye. See you soon.